So last week, we began a new journey, a series entitled Why They Like Jesus. And just for a few weeks, all we're doing is kind of just probing why Jesus was so popular. Now, there's probably easy answers to that, and we don't have to spend 4 weeks doing that. He was popular. I mean, he did some amazing things. We talked about that a little bit last week. That throughout the record in the Gospels, you know, Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John, Jesus did all these wonderful things. He healed people. He brought people back to life. He gave sight to the blind. People who were paralyzed, they could walk. People who couldn't hear, they were deaf, they could hear now. There were those who were possessed with evil spirits, and he healed them. There were people with back problems. How many people here got back problems? There were people, man, a lot of people here with back problems. Jesus did some amazing things with people with back pain, and it just continued to increase his popularity. Now, maybe easy for us to come up with answers to why Jesus was popular, but you know, when it comes to maybe our own lives, you know, people we're in contact with, you know, what makes people popular? You know, yeah, we understand why sports people are popular. You know, right now I would understand if you're an Ohio State fan why JT Barrett is more popular than Cardale Jones. I can understand that, right? That makes sense. But then there's people, I mean they're popular, just don't make sense. Remember last week I talked about Nick Horton, talked about this guy, and I mean, he's just a popular guy. I go to the football game on Thursday night at Reynoldsburg High School, which was amazing, by the way. We won in triple overtime. Just a phenomenon. I go underneath the bleachers of the home side, and if you've never been to a Reynoldsburg football game and you've never been under the bleachers at the home game, it is an experience. It's like this just dungeon, and just all these people that you didn't even know were at the game are like underneath the bleachers. But at the end of underneath the bleachers, there's this guy down there, and when I tell you, he's just standing there by the fence, and there are just girls lined up. Can I take a picture with you? Can I take a picture with you? It was so ridiculous. And so I asked to take a picture with him, and this is what we got. I mean, that's two handsome guys up there. That's kind of cool. And put that on my Instagram, and maybe it will be shared. And I'll, you know, I think I have like, I don't know, 35 followers. He has over 100,000 followers. And maybe because of this picture, I'll get like 35, I'll get 45 followers out of this. You know, they're trying to figure out why he's popular. I mean, I guess he's a cute kid. I mean, he's a sophomore in high school, but he's not like a singer. I mean, he's not, you know, boy band. This is Nick Horton. I even asked him, you know, when we were taking that picture, you can't see me, I'm trying to talk to him, like, why are you so popular? And he just said, Instagram. I mean, that's all he said. I don't know why, but Jesus was a popular guy, probably because of the amazing things he did. But then there's some subtle nuances that when you read the Gospels, you also see. And last week, we said, man, Jesus looked like the people. He didn't come in the people. He wasn't this, like, 7 foot guy that just stood above everyone, that just garnered attention. There was something about the way Jesus lived amongst the people that allowed people or afforded people a window into his life that caused people to say, man, I need to get to know this guy. I need to find out more about this guy, because he looked like he dressed like him. There's nothing to indicate that Jesus came in some fancy clothes and he went around and walked around, and that's what drew people. No, he looked like him. He was probably poor, just like the rest of the people. And as a church, if we're following Jesus, one of the things that we're going to do is we're going to be incarnational in our ministry. That is to say that we're going learned to be as people that are part of the community. When we go back to our respective communities in Reynoldsburg and Pickerington and Gahanna and Westerville and all over northern, you know, Columbus, we don't live in our neighborhoods as if we've been transported here from another planet. No, we grew up here on earth. We grew up in our neighborhoods. And for some reason, Jesus has done something in our lives. And guess what? We struggle and deal with some of the same stuff that people in our neighborhoods deal with. And what people need to see is that we're people just like them. We're all in this together. I like to say, listen, I'm just a beggar trying to tell another beggar where to find some crumbs. That's all I'm doing. That's just living the human experience. Now another reason I think that Jesus was so popular is because of this thing here, a table. And I think it's fitting that I don't preach from a pulpit today, but I preach from a table, because the table was Jesus's preferred pulpit. We don't see Jesus on some elevated stage necessarily preaching to the people. Yeah, there's the instance where he's on the mountainside and there's people with him, but there's actually nothing there to indicate that he was preaching to a large crowd of people. It sounds like he was preaching to a small group of his disciples, but that would be one instance out of many where he had discourse with other people. And the place that we find Jesus saying so much of what he believed and so much of what God was showing him to show to other people, it took place at a table. At a table. Turn to Luke chapter 5 and verse number 27. And this is just one of many stories. I mean, I literally said, which one do I pick? And I kind of did one of these. And, okay, boom. You know, Luke chapter 5 and verse number 27. And it says, after this, Jesus went out and saw a tax collector by the name of Levi sitting at his tax booth. Follow me, Jesus said to him. And Levi got up. He left everything and followed him. Then Levi held a great banquet. That's food, that's party, that's celebration, table. He had held a great banquet for Jesus at his house, and a large crowd of tax collectors and others were eating with them. But the Pharisees and the teachers of the law who belonged to their sect complained to his disciples, "Why do you eat and drink with tax collectors?" Again, that's just one example of an instance where Jesus, his preferred place was eating. If you read throughout the Gospel of Luke and the book of Acts, there's no way for you to get through those two works without kind of getting hungry, because Jesus was always at a table. He was always eating. In chapter 7 of Luke, verse number 36, this is when one of the Pharisees invited Jesus to have dinner with him. He went to the Pharisee's house and reclined at the table. In Luke chapter 9, we get the story of Jesus feeding 5,000 people. No tables necessarily, but I've got to imagine 5,000 people, that's a lot of food. Luke chapter 10, verse number 38 through 42, Jesus is spending some time with some of his close friends, and they kind of get in an argument over the preparation of food. They're about to eat at a table. Luke chapter 14, Jesus is at a meal where he kind of goes off on the Pharisees about some things, and then he tells a parable about a great banquet. He's talking about food. He's talking about a table. Luke chapter 15, the setting of Jesus telling the story of the lost coin and the lost sheep and the famous the prodigal son is because he was at a table eating with sinners. Like, why do you and your disciples eat with sinners? Luke chapter 19, Jesus is invited. Actually, he invites himself to this guy by the name of Zacchaeus. He goes to his house and has dinner with him. Luke chapter 22, this is the longest account and recording of what we call the Last Supper or the Lord's Supper or communion or Eucharist. Is a very detailed account of what took place at this last Passover dinner, and it was at a table. Post resurrection, Luke chapter 24, we see Jesus walking down a road with some disciples, and they get to talking, and then Jesus is like, yo, let's go break some bread, and they break bread eating at a table, and it says that their eyes were open. They recognized who he was. They understood everything that he had been telling them. And then later on, when he's with his apostles, you know, surely Jesus, you have a lot to tell your apostles. There's a lot of things that you need to share with them, and surely he's going to get to those things. But you know what he tells them? Y'all got some fish. You ever just want a little fish? You know, they got some fish, and they had some dinner. Someone said Jesus in the Gospels was either going to a meal, he was in a meal, he was leaving a meal, or he was talking about a meal. Jesus was, what I like to say, he was a foodie. He liked to eat. He loved sitting at a table and eating with people. Now, foundational to the life of the church is the table. Not just the communion table. Of course, that stands paramount in our collection here today. You know, some would say that the reason that we are here really is to partake of the Lord's Supper at his table. But not just that, just the idea of fellowship and table. Again, if you go over to the book of Acts, which is the continuation of the Luke story, one of the first things you see the church doing after the church has started in Acts chapter 2, it says they continued in the apostles' doctrine and in fellowship and in breaking of bread, table, eating. That's a fundamental teaching in the life of the church. You see, the church mimics what Jesus does. If Jesus spent a great majority of his time at tables, it would seem that the church would follow suit. You know, at the table, there are some things that's communicated. You see, at a table, if you and I are sitting at a table, we're kind of demonstrating. Now I'm kind of digging into some ancient understanding of table fellowship. It may not be the same today. It may not be the same here. You know, we may go somewhere and sit at a table with someone, and it's just a matter of convenience. You know, there's nowhere else to sit. But in ancient societies, to sit at a table with somebody, to invite someone to a table and to sit and to have communication and to share something on that table was to demonstrate that there was no hostility. To sit at a table with someone was to make a declaration that we're friends. To sit at a table was a way to make accommodations, not draw out lines of hostility. That's important, church, because again, when we're looking at Jesus sitting at these tables with folks that even in our reading of Scripture, we would say, oh, that's an enemy. You don't sit down with the Pharisees, Jesus. They're trying to hurt you, man. They're trying to discredit you. They're trying to trap you. Why are you sitting at a table with these enemies? Now, what might have been off-putting to many during the ministry of Jesus is that he was willing to call those who you would say would be enemies, he would call those who were not repented sinners, but sinning sinners. He would actually sit down at a table with them and call them friends. And that's why the Pharisees and the scribes and the teachers, they didn't understand it. They knew the importance of sitting at a table. They knew what sitting at a table would constitute. And so how could you do that? Are you telling me that you're friends with those people? That Jesus ate with so many begs a few questions. Would you invite Jesus to your table? Now, easy answer would be like, oh yeah, I'd invite Jesus. But think deeply now. Think deeply now. Because some of us are so consumed with shame and embarrassment and baggage that I have in my life. And you know what? man, I it would be cool to have Jesus at my table, but he knows too much. I don't know if I'm ready to deal with all that Jesus is going to bring up. You know, he knows me better than I know myself, and I may, you know, sit here and have a, you know, big plate of ribs. Well, he's Jewish, a big plate of beef stew, and he, you know, I may be thinking we're just going to focus on this beef stew, and he may take a bite and he may like the beef stew, but then he's going to want to talk about some of the stuff that's in my life. You know, that's a very important question that we have to ask ourselves. Is would we invite Jesus to our table? Is he welcome at our table? Are we willing for Jesus to come to the table and change us? You see, because that's what I believe fundamentally took place at these tables that Jesus ate at in the first century. When he ate at the table of these sinners, I would love for somebody to uncover some writing of somebody who sat at the table of Jesus, and they can tell you the story of how their life changed over a piece of bread. Because that's what happens when we invite Jesus to our table, transformation. But a lot of us we're resistant to transformation. We're resistant to change. I like who I am, and what I am is a pretty good guy. And so why do I need Jesus to come in and mess with it? But the truth is that all of us in here, from the elder to the servant, from the preacher to the Sunday school teacher, to the kid, to the adult, to the male, to the female, to the professional, to the white collar worker, to the blue collar worker, we all need change in our lives. Will we invite Jesus to our table? Or are we too ashamed? Or do we think we're too sinful? At the table, there's touch. And we're inviting touch of Jesus when he comes to the table. Some of the sinners in the first century, during the times of Jesus, apparently had no problem. Say, hey, come eat at my house. Even the Pharisees, who were his enemies, could you come to my house and eat? Will you invite him to your table? Another question that perhaps we need to probe is, when he invites, will you come to his table? You see, because the invitation is reciprocal. We invite him to our table. He has invited us to his table. And there's some things that can take place. We already talked about this idea of transformation, but man, we come to his table and our eyes are open like those disciples on the road to Emmaus after they had this encounter with Jesus and they break bread with Jesus. Their eyes were open. They begin to understand things that they didn't understand before. Perhaps at the table of Jesus, when we accept his invitation, that thing that we're struggling with, our eyes become open. That problem that we don't know how to solve, our eyes begin to open. That reconciliation that needs to take place with our wife or our husband or our children, our eyes begin to open, or even in the church of Christ, if we would just come to his table, our eyes would be open rather than just remaining at our own tables and remaining divided and remaining stuck on what I believe and what I believe is the best, because what you believe is stupid. But if we all come to the table of Jesus, maybe our eyes are open to something bigger. Will we come to his table for new revelation? Will we come to his table to be fed? But then there's a third question. There is the question of, would we invite him to our table? Would we accept his invitation to his table, Jesus? The third question is, who are we inviting to our own tables? Let's get past the question of whether we invite Jesus or not. But do we invite sinners to our table? Do we invite our enemies to our tables? Do we invite those who we have vehement disagreement with to our table? Again, if we're going to take this message of Jesus at the table in the Gospels, we've got to consider all the guests. We've got to consider the fact that Jesus sat at a table with those who perhaps at the end were part of the conspiracy to get him killed, his enemies. Who are you inviting to your table? Are they welcome? Yeah, perhaps that's the question where we begin to turn a corner, and you can probe that individually. Just think about it. Think about who's the normal guest at your table. For most of us, it's just our families, right? I mean, maybe a few church members. But what about a stranger? What about someone who you know don't have it all together? What about someone who doesn't have the best hygiene? What about someone who doesn't have the best table manners? Are they welcome at your table? That's a question to probe individually, and I would challenge you to do so. But as we move towards an understanding of us being this missional church that I've been preaching about for the past several months, what does that mean for us as we are called to be God's missional movement, be the hands and the feet of Jesus in our community? Who are we inviting to this table? Is this table reserved for the middle class? Is this table reserved for those who got all their senses? Is this table reserved for everyone who has all the answers already? Is this table reserved for those who know it all? Is this table reserved for the seasoned? Who's invited to this table? One thing we can be sure of is that God's missional movement is a movement that is invitational. And if we follow the lead of Jesus, all are welcome at that table. Now, what that means and how that's played out is a subject of much discussion and even much debate. I don't know why it's a subject of much debate. I believe that Jesus was an equal opportunity savior who invited everybody to the table. Not everybody walked away from the table transformed, but at least at the table there was the opportunity for transformation. You know, my early images of table is the table in the mornings with my dad. And I know I've shared this before, but it's just a vivid memory of waking up in the morning and seeing my dad at the table with a metal coffee, one of those percolator pots, y'all know what I'm talking about? He didn't just boil water. He never put coffee in the top part, but he just boiled the water, and he'd get his coffee cup, and he'd put like 3 or 4 spoons of Senka. How many people know about Senka coffee? He put about 4 spoons of Senka and what seemed like 30 spoons of sugar, and he'd get some coffee mate, and he'd put that in there, and he'd boil the water, and he'd pour his water in there, and he'd stir it up, and he'd sit there, turn on the AM radio, which all I remember playing out of that AM radio was Neil Diamond songs. All I remember was American Blue Jeans and Sweet Caroline. But those songs would play, and he would sit down with his coffee. And as one who wanted to be like my dad, I began to sit down, and I began to do the same thing. I would get my coffee cup, and I had to get my saucer, because my dad had a saucer too, and he would put his cup on his saucer. So I'd get my cup and I'd get my saucer, and I'd put it down there, and I didn't put coffee in it, but I put some sugar in my cup, and I had him pour some hot water in my cup, and as he drank his sugary coffee, I drank my sugary water, because I wanted to be like my dad. I was offered an opportunity to be transformed into the likeness of my dad. I could have very easily chose to look at what he was doing and say, that's ridiculous. I'm about to go outside and I'm going to go play ball. But I chose to stay there and to be like my dad. So then, there are many who have been invited to the table who simply say, not for me. Let's stop predetermining that decision for people. Let's just invite them to the table. That's all we can do, is invite them to the table and let Jesus do the transformation. They have to make the choice. In Luke chapter 14, verse 16, I want to read this story as we close. Luke chapter 14, verse number 16, it says, when one of those at the table with him heard this, Jesus at the table, I love it. He said to Jesus, blessed is the one who will eat at the feast in the kingdom of God. And Jesus replied, a certain man was preparing a great banquet and invited many guests. At the time of the banquet, he sent his servant to tell those who had been invited, come, for everything is now ready. But they all alike began to make excuses. The first said, I have just bought a field and I must go and see it. Please excuse me. Another said, I have just bought five yoke of oxen and I am on my way to try them out. Please excuse me. Still another said, I just got married and I can't come. The servant came back and reported this to his master. Then the owner of the house became angry and ordered his servants, go out quickly into the streets and the alleys of the town and bring in the poor, the crippled, the blind, and the lame. Sir, the servant said, what you've ordered has been done, but there is still room. Then the master told his servant, go out to the roads and country lanes and compel them to come in so that my house will be full. I tell you, not one of those who were invited will get a taste of my banquet. I love that Jesus ate at a table with sinners and with people who had been discarded by society, and he ate with people who you don't get excited about them being your dinner guests. You get excited about somebody famous being your dinner guest. You don't get excited about someone who has no fame and nothing to offer and someone who might rob you to be your dinner guest. But those are the very people that Jesus says, invite them to the table. And the reason we should invite them to the table is so that we don't get it twisted and we don't too fast forget that we used to be in the streets, that we used to be the poor, we used to be the lame, we used to be the blind, we used to be the person that had ill repute. We used to be the one that didn't have the good reputation. And right now we stand having a place at the table of Christ. Why was Jesus so popular? Because he ate with them. He ate with them. And at that table, for so many, it meant transformation. And as a church body, we've got to be invitational. Invite them into your homes to eat. Invite them to church. Invite them to events. Invite them into your lives. We're incarnational. We're just like, we have skin and blood just like everybody else, right? We look just like everyone else. We're also invitational though. You see, after people see that, well, you look just like me, so this transformation that you're experiencing, like, how can I get some of that? Why don't you come to the table and I'll show you. There probably is a message for us regarding just table fellowship in general. Perhaps one of the reasons why it's hard for us to invite others on the outside to our table is because we haven't invited each other to one another's table. So here is the invitation. We'll have the regular invitation praise team. Y'all can come up if y'all want. We'll have the regular invitation in a second. If you want prayer, if you want the church to be with you, touch you and agree with you, and something you want to share with the body, we'll have that. But I also want to invite you to this. I shared this at a family meeting, I think, earlier this year. And I know everyone here wasn't there, but I shared a challenge with the church that you invite someone in this body that you've never eaten with to eat in your home together. Just want somebody. I don't know who that might be. But someone you're not, I mean, there's some people that you eat with all the time. And listen, here are the rules. Don't go out to dinner. Don't go out to dinner. Say that for another time. But this instance, I just invite someone to come over to your house and have a meal, preferably around a table. Maybe if it's too many, your family's too big, get in a circle in the living room. That's how we do it. Our house. We get in the front room and bring your plate in. And if you get barbecue sauce on the carpet, you know, it's good sauce. Just lick it up, you know. But invite someone. It's my challenge. This is my invitation. This is the invitation I'm giving. This is the one. Invite someone who you've never had over to your house over for dinner. Is that cool? Is that too strange, church? Is that outlandish? Is that all right? Perhaps that's where we start. Perhaps that's why the early church had this practice of getting in each other's homes, because deeply embedded in them was the story of Jesus, who invited others to their table. So let's practice that with one another, and then when it comes time for us to invite a stranger, a sinner, an enemy to our table, it's already part of our understanding. God be praised for all that he is doing in this body, for all that he is doing in the lives of everyone here. God is up to something incredibly amazing, and I will not let the evil one try to steal this joy away. I'm happy, church. I'm joyful, y'all. And for some reason, I don't know if it's just the way I'm feeling, maybe I'm just so euphoric, y'all just look good today. And that's all right. That's all right. Let's take this good look and let's invite people to the table. Amen. If there's anything that the church can do for you, pray for you, speak with you, if there's something you want to share with the body, if there's a conversation you want to have to deepen your understanding of who God is, we want to have that conversation. So as we sing and stand, as we stand and sing, if there's anything that we can do for you, we want to do that for you. If you want to make a profession of faith, you want to get baptized, I don't know if there's water in the baptistry, but we will get you baptized. That's easy. But we'll take care of that, because we want to minister to your needs. Is that okay? Let's stand and let's sing.